tonight on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez. It's Friday, so we have our political roundtable of Eric Elk, Ken Jakubowski, Dave Lundy, with special guests Scott Stantis and Tom Mikaitis. We'll also be playing another episode of What's That From happening at the end of the show, and be sure to get your calls in for Tell Me Something Good. But now, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio here in Chicago, it's time for Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez.
Yesterday, Thursday, April 12th, was International Holocaust Remembrance Day, and in the last week, we learned of a chemical attack on in Syria, and we saw photos of children fighting for their lives, being treated by medical professionals, and we wonder sometimes, what are we doing? What as a country, as Americans, are we doing to make sure that we are taking care of each other? As humans, as you know, inhabitants of this planet, what responsibility do we have to those who are suffering? And when you think of the Holocaust, and yesterday again being International Holocaust Remembrance Day, what could Americans have done to provide solace and refuge for those escaping the horrors of Nazi Germany? And it's something I thought about yesterday as I actually was at the Holocaust National Museum in D.C., and there is a wing for Syria. And I thought, you know, here we are in the capital of our country, the most powerful nation in the country, in the world. And what are we doing? What is our role in this? Are we doing everything we possibly can? And today, the President of the United States, tonight, after just shortly after, before 8 p.m. Central Time, had a press conference announcing that we had launched a missile attack on Syria, on places that were on destinations that held chemical weapons of destruction. And we later heard a press conference from the military saying that this is in order to dissuade Syria from using chemical weapons again. And what is our role now? What is our role? What do we do? Is this what we should be doing? Is this the time? Was it not the time a week ago? If there's another attack, was it worth it to kill innocent people now? These are a lot of questions that we have as Americans. Are we crossing a line? Charles Lipson was on earlier with Justin Kaufman asking if perhaps we've now crossed a line with Putin. An unknown line, because he doesn't necessarily state his objectives up front. And perhaps neither do we. Joining me in studio is the cartoonist and editorial board member for Chicago Tribune, Scott Stantis. Scott, thank you so much for joining us at the last minute, because you're following these things. You know, you and I are both humorists. So when people hear us, they think, well, we can't possibly talk about issues like this seriously, can we?
Well, of course we can.
Can we?
Of course we can.
I know.
Because we're smart selling people. Humor takes a lot of smarts to be funny.
It's also our filter. We take the things that sadden us, anger us, and inspire us. And we put that on the world. And so also having the conversation is what you and I do. And also joining us is Elliot Serrano, obviously our Friday night regular. Hi, Elliot.
Hello.
So when you heard the news tonight that we had launched a missile attack on Syria, on two bases that hold chemical weapons, I believe one of them is also a research lab. They're saying that this is an attempt to set back their research by years and to debilitate their ability to do this again.
Paint me cynical on stuff like that. This seems like a very measured response, which I suppose is the right thing to do. But we're told a lot of things, and I'm not convinced that they're absolutely truthful. There's a lot of people out there who are convinced that this is just another move to try to diminish both Russia and China. It's part of a bigger global struggle. But obviously we saw the gas attack. We saw the results of it, certainly.
But there are people who say that was staged, by the way.
There are some people who say the other wave of attacks. This is a regime that has a history of doing this, so I tend to believe that these are true stories.
Why do we pick and choose the countries that we detest their genocide efforts, whether it's in Africa or in Syria. We pick and choose.
Well, we do pick and choose. Well, because it's what we've done for forever and a day. But you asked an interesting question coming into this discussion. I think it's one that's worth noting, and it's a really important one to answer. And that is, what do we do? You were at the Holocaust Museum. Mm-hmm. You know what America's response to the Holocaust when it was happening in Europe was? We turned a boat full of Jews who were trying to escape Nazi-occupied Europe, and we turned them away.
As we have in the last several years,
Guess what we're doing now?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I walked over you.
No.
Yeah, look what we're doing now.
We
and it's infuriating. These people are trying to escape oppression. Mm-hmm. They're trying to find a better place for themselves, for their children, for the future, a place that actually has a future, and we're turning them away.
And Elliot, people say, well, there's no vetting process, only it is a two-year vetting process place.
Okay, look, if you had a bowl full of Skittles and you knew that two of those Skittles were going to be poisonous, would you eat that bowl of Skittles, Scott?
I hate Skittles. Can we make it M&M's? See?
I like Starburst.
Starburst. See? Here's the thing, and here's, I think, what makes Syria as complicated as it's been. Mind you, these are the same debates we had during the Obama administration, when mm-hmm. all these things were going on with Assad. The world pretty much agreed that it was horrendous what was going on. It was a genocide. And we kind of like hemmed and hawed. And we had these same debates then, too. And Obama was saying there's a red line. You can't cross it. Assad crossed it.
Yep.
We didn't do anything.
Right.
We did, you know, some measured strikes. And people now look back on that and said, Obama should have done more. Mind you, he did want Congress to say, approve of anything, any military efforts that were going to be made in Syria, which Congress would not give. But
right. He didn't want to invoke his rights to the President of the United States, as President Trump has tonight, to do this kind of a move.
Right, because then you need, getting into something like this, you need the political will. You need the support of the entire country. Because people forget, this happens right after, how long have we been in Iraq and in Afghanistan? And
Forever.
And we're, you know, let's face it, kind of tired of being in other countries and having our boys killed. For what reason? We still don't understand what's going on in Afghanistan. And every time we talk about pulling the troops out, they'll say, no, we're at the goal line. Just give us, all we got to do is push a little bit harder and then we'll fix it there. And how long have we been saying that too?
I agree.
So I mean, I'm not saying that as a justification. I'm saying those are just the arguments that are made back and forth. We're kind of like, after a while, we're kind of tired of being the ones that have to help everybody else straighten things out.
Well, to be fair,
But
this is a British operation. We helped. The French were there. The French have surrendered and are now part of Syria. Just to throw it out there. I had to go there.
That was comedy is tragedy yeah. plus time. That was not enough time.
There was not enough time. Okay, not enough no. Time so, there. But it was an allied forces. It wasn't just the United States acting as the world's policeman. But we're always the world's policeman. I think Elliot's absolutely right. We're tired. We're tired of spending the capital. We're tired of spending the treasure and the lives it takes to do this to seemingly no avail.
Especially when it seems like the first thing that we got into, I mean, going back to all the way back to Afghanistan, where it was, we're going to smoke them out, right?
We could go all the way back to North Korea.
Right.
We could go all the way back to Vietnam and say, what was our role there? And, you know, again, being in D.C., there are tour guides who are saying the men and women who fought in North Korea and Vietnam fought for your freedom. Only those were not those destinations, those were not threats to our freedom directly. It was something that we got into and not necessarily quite understanding as Americans why continuously we don't know why we were there. But I don't doubt for a minute that those men and women gave their lives for something they believed in. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, again, to the idea of what is our role in the world, we have to continue to define that. And is this, I think that when children are gassed and murdered, that seems like a place where we belong, for right or wrong,
then
for
go after,
better
then
or worse.
Actually go out. If you're going to diminish that machine that, you know, perpetrated that horrible crime, then do it for real. Don't do surgical strikes. Go after the military. Go after the airfields. Go after, if you're really going to do it.
But how much does that bring Russia in? And then how much does that bring Iran in? How much does that bring in the rest of Asia?
Or ISIS, too. And don't forget, and the Kurds are involved in this, too.
So does anyone, 312-981-7200, does anyone at the moment think well, then what's the other? Well, but what happens? We don't know who's in the United States and who has plans for us. What's the trigger? What's the line for perhaps a cell in the United States to go, this was the line that we were told
I don't know that it's a line for those cells like that.
Right,
I think that
but,
that's just
but retaliation, I don't know. Retaliation on our own soil seems like it's, we've been told before, it's not a matter of if, but when.
They say that, and I think that we've already experienced to some degree, in some smaller scale than 9/11, that it was pretty massive.
Let's take a break here, because we're going to talk to Professor Tom Makatis. You know what, I have to get his name correct. Makaitis, thank you very much. I had it in my head. Professor Tom Makaitis, who teaches history at DePaul. He has courses in British, modern European, and military research. And he also has research writing and covering terrorism, insurgency, counterinsurgency, and peace operations. So let's talk to him when we come back on 720 WGN. Earlier tonight, President Trump announced that he had ordered missile attacks on Syria in response to chemical weapons used on his own people. Joining us on the line is Professor Tom Makaitis, and he is a professor of history and has, I'm guessing, some thoughts on this tonight. Hi, Professor. How are you doing tonight?
Good evening. How are you?
I'm okay. So let me ask you this. When the attacks were announced earlier, not too long ago, what were your thoughts on what the Americans' response should be? What our, as a country, how we should respond?
Yeah, well, I can say I'm not surprised, but, you know, I'm also a bit discouraged by it because I don't see it accomplishing anything. I mean, I was reporting almost exactly a year ago on exactly the same scenario where Assad had used chemical weapons and we hurled cruise missiles into his country, and he backed off and he waited till the heat died down and he just kept on doing the same old thing. So, you know, anything short of a sustained campaign to force him to the bargaining table or regime change is not going to change things. And what I find really discouraging is, yeah, it's horrible to die in a chemical attack, but to be blown apart by a barrel bomb in a war that has killed 500,000 people, why do we have so much moral outrage for the death of 43?
Well, and people are texting me right now, because I had mentioned earlier that there are innocent people who are dying, and someone wrote, innocent people are not involved. I'm not sure what the rest of their conversation was, but they hung up before I could take that call. I'm guessing because I might have mentioned it in relation to this missile attack on Syria, but presumably there will be people who aren't involved or are, you know, working in the building or are ordered to be there.
Absolutely. I mean, the word precision strike is a very misleading term. When you hit a facility, there is going to be what is euphemistically called collateral damage. Even the Pentagon briefer tonight said we're going to try to minimize it, reduce the likelihood, but he admitted preventing it is absolutely impossible. So if all we're doing here is adding to the body count without any kind of coherent strategy to bring this horrible war to a conclusion, then I'm afraid I have to ask what the point is.
Well, Professor, I was wondering, I mean, there are a lot of moving parts now in Syria. There's obviously Assad, the Assad government, mm-hmm. the civil war that started there, and which is now in the southwest part of the country. You've got ISIS, which is still active in the northeastern part. You have Kurds, which are still tangibly involved in that. And, of course, you have Russia. So.
Yeah.
I mean, given that you're juggling all of these in the air, what's, in your view, and I agree with you, I mean, this was a ridiculous attack only because it just says, hey, we're mad, and it blew up some facilities, and some janitor was there, you know, cleaning the floors at 3 a.m, and that's the one of the fatalities, probably. What, I mean, so what's a practical approach to this?
Well, you left out the Iranians, the Free Syrian Army, the Iraqis. I mean,
I think the Inuits are there, too.
Yeah, there is no good alternative. We have missed the window of opportunity 2011-12 where it might have been possible to do something. At this point, there's very little that we can do except put a fence around it, let it burn itself out. unless we, the one possibility would be to sustain the airstrikes continuously until Assad agrees to negotiate some kind of end to hostilities. That is possible.
That seems to be what the president has said, and the military says it's an open-ended assault.
Yeah, which is a nice thing to say, but is not reality. What they also said is it's open-ended until he stops using chemical weapons. He's already stopped. He's not going to do it in the face of this. And plus the fact we gave him an entire week to move all of his assets into places where the Russians are, but he knows we're not going to hit. I mean, this whole idea is we're deconflicting the airspace. That's another fancy way of saying that we essentially have made clear to the Russians we don't want any direct confrontation with them, which I agree with. I mean, we don't want this to escalate. But, you know, there are essentially safe havens in Syria for even Assad and his assets.
Why did the president wait this long? And what effect did his tweets or his press conferences saying, maybe we'll attack, maybe we won't attack, expect a missile attack or don't expect it? What are your thoughts on that kind of role in the world?
Strategic communication requires clear, consistent messaging connected to a coherent strategy that communicates to an adversary and to your allies that there's a predictability to what you're doing. I think the tweets are driven more by the president's, to put it bluntly, desire for attention. If he keeps saying, maybe I'll do it today, maybe I'll do it tomorrow, maybe I'll do it the next day, it keeps the pot boiling. Now, I understand that, and that's the way he operates, but it's not useful when you're trying to resolve a situation diplomatically, so you don't have to use military action.
Well, so I have a couple people who are asking, you all talk like a bunch of uneducated boobs. You condone chemical killings of innocent people. Do you not think the world should take action?
Yeah, well, you know, I get that a lot. But I mean, I've been to 53 countries and several conflicted areas, including Kosovo and Bosnia, right after the war. So I'm not a detached ivory tower liberal who isn't aware of the horrific effects of war. I'm far too aware of it. I saw the aftermath of it in the Balkans. I don't tolerate it. I think it's horrible. But tell me what the difference is to a child who gets gassed with chlorine and one who gets disemboweled by a barrel bomb. And why is there moral appropriation over a weapon and not over the overall loss of life? 43 dead in this attack. 500,000 in the Civil War, and he continues to kill on a regular basis. Are we saying to him, as long as you use conventional weapons, it's fine with us? We're only going to get mad if you use gas.
Professor, I want to thank you so much. We've been talking to Professor Mikaitis, and I have to go to a break because we do have updates coming from ABC, and we'd love to touch base with you next week if you're available this late at night. Does that work for you?
Oh, sure. I suspect that'll be up.
I appreciate it, sir. Get some rest. I know you've got a lot of people to talk to, a lot of work to do over the weekend, and your students to also, kind of work this through as well.
All right. You have a nice evening.
Thank you so much again, Professor Mikaitis from DePaul University. More after this on 720 WGN. Clearly the big news of the evening, of the day, and of the weekend coming before us will be the missile strikes in Syria. I think there's a lot to talk about, and I am getting a lot of texts. There's a very energetic texture from the 414, and we really do wish you, my friend, my scholar of history, our 81-year-old friend in Wisconsin. I am not being condescending. I do indeed wish you a glorious weekend. I hope you all the joy and happiness that you, in fact, deserve. So we are also talking about a lot of things tonight. I was in D.C. for the last few days, and I was overwhelmed by the idea, I guess. I'm a bit of a history nerd. I have also studied history my entire life, my friend in Wisconsin. And I was struck by the idea of democracy, and the fact that I am talking and having these conversations with you is, in fact, a reflection of the sacrifices made by many who've gone before us to protect our rights, whether or not you find their right to bear arms or the freedom of speech to be the utmost important thing to you. Maybe you think that the, you know, there shall not be quartering of soldiers in your home to be more important. It could be, you know, habeas corpus might be more important to you. We all have things that perhaps makes us show up on certain days. For me, I think that the freedom of speech is probably first and foremost. I think that it goes, that's why they made it first. And today something very interesting happened, and I don't know what it means, not being someone who's worked for the Tribune Company, nor in the meantime worked for the Tronc Company. The major shareholder, Michael Farrow, who in the last few weeks was revealed to be a persistent and chronic sexual harasser, has suddenly sold his shares back to the McCormick family, who were the original Tribune Company.
McCormick Media.
So we have in studio with us, we have three journalists of varying, well, I guess, I'm, by the way, to remind everyone, I am a broadcaster. I am not educated as a journalist. Heather Lally joins us. She is a journalist from Medill School of Journalism. We have Scott Stantis, editorial board member of the Chicago Tribune.
Tronc.
You've been saying that for so very long. Elliot, you and I are, you're more of a biblical scholar and a media specialist.
Media specialist. I mean, I was trained in the rigors of proper journalism when I freelanced for Red Eye.
Right.
I mean, I had Scott Kleinberg when he was there. He really drilled me, even on simple articles about something that happens at a hotel because of a nerd convention. You know, check your sources. You know, talk to everyone. Right. Make sure you're showing every side of the issue. So, you know, I do appreciate the amount of work that goes into covering a story.
Well, and I think that Heather was really explaining this well to me before the show tonight, because there was also a move recently to unionize the journalists with the Chicago Tribune. Woo! And I asked her. I said very, very sincerely, should journalists unionize for, you know, their jobs?
Most definitely. I was always taught that being a journalist is a trade, like being a shoe repair person or any sort of skilled trade. And I think it's vital that these guys have a union, and I'm delighted to see this bit of news.
Yeah, I think at this stage of where the business is across the board, unionization is taking hold everywhere. You look at like Denver. The Denver Post is currently owned by, and they ran an editorial, which was awesome. Did you see this?
It's beautiful.
The people at the Denver Post said, did you see this, Elliot? You know, this is a great story. They actually wrote an editorial and say, they're owned by a hedge fund out of New York City. They had massive losses. So in order to recoup those losses, so they could give themselves 7- and 8-digit, you know, bonuses, they cut a third of the newsroom staff for the Denver Post. And so the people at the Denver Post had an editorial saying, please, in the name of everything that's holy, sell us. Just get the hell out of journalism. Let people who actually see it for what it is, which is a mission. And so here at the Chicago Tribune recently, it's a long process, but right now what you do is you fill out cards, and it has to be a percentage of the newsroom. And I would say every single person who was asked to fill out the card, fill it out, and myself included. Because we look at what's happening in corporate. Yes, Michael Farrell just sold the company for, I think he's getting somewhere in the neighborhood of $22 a share. $20 plus a share for a company that's current today was at less, was around $15, $16. It closed at $17 because they heard the story.
Really?
Yeah. So, and this is on top of, by the way, this is a guy who still gets a consulting, I'm doing air quotes, which are always effective on the radio. He's getting a consulting contract for $15 million, which was a way for them to sort of hide the money that they were paying him for his company that was leasing back private jet usage to Tronc. So yes, we're going to unionize. You betcha. Absolutely.
Wow.
And this is coming from a guy, everyone looks at me and thinks, oh, you're conservative, you're Republican. I thought you hated unions. I don't like public unions. I think it means that the people who work for the state then become the adversarial relationship with the citizens. We can discuss that another time. But private unions, I'm absolutely for. 100%. They gave us the middle class. It's the only power we have now with these robber barons that are running journalism right now. Any journalist I've known and I know Heather would agree with me. I know Patty, you would. Elliot, I'm sure you would. Every true journalist you've met, if they went into any other profession, would make 3-4 times what they make today. But they saw it as a mission, and they saw it as a calling, and they do a hell of a job. And to not compensate them for what they're doing right now, and they're being compensated.
Well, and the vulnerability that you guys are exposed to,
the uncertainty
as well.
Yeah. Is astounding. Like, I just can't imagine living under that constant uncertainty. Is very disheartening.
Oh, it sucks.
What has been the reaction amongst, have you talked to people working at the Tribune about the sale today?
Back to the about the sale, but it's an interesting sale. It's to McCormick Media, which I knew nothing about. Looked it up this afternoon, or this evening, rather. And it's their number one source of income was International Harvester. Okay.
All right.
Sure. So, you know, as I'm walking out the door to do the show tonight, I told, honey, we're going to have cut rate on that thrasher you wanted.
Well, it's interesting. I don't know where this came from, because there's another bigger corporation that's pending as far as the sale goes. And they have said that, you know, they think the McCormick family falls in line with what their goals are for the Tribune and the Times.
Well, and the current, the chairman de jure of Tronc. I'm sorry, the Tronc, that's the legacy of Pharaoh. It's the dumbest corporate name in the history of the United States. I mean, it's got to be right up there. Anyway, so the current chairman has sent out a very curse email throughout to the employees, just saying that this means nothing, it changes nothing, it was not done with Tronc's knowledge. And so you're going, this change, really, because now the majority stockholder is somebody else, and that doesn't change anything? That's ridiculous. Of course it changes things. If the McCormick Media, whatever they turn out to be, want certain things done, they're going to do it.
Yep. That's the thing, is that it doesn't matter who the owners are or what the auspices of the purchase. No one knows what's going to happen next.
No. So there is a pending sale of the LA Times. They're supposed to, I forget what, a bureaucratic entity was supposed to rule on it today or Monday, whether or not it can sell to a fellow who loves to claim that he's the richest physician in America.
Is he Trump's physician?
He is not. No, apparently he understands numbers in that. Yeah. The budget's not 1 pound under obese.
All right, let's take a break here. We're going to talk a little bit too about, look, we're talking about journalism. We're talking about what's happening next. Wait, hold on. There's, we'll talk to Jose when we come back. And I also want to talk to Heather about the work that she does, not just as a journalist, but as a writer in the city of Chicago. Part of our image is, you know, obviously our people, our architecture, and what my Lyft driver in D.C. said, the best food in the country. So I kind of love that people know us for that. So we'll talk about that when we come back. We also have our listener, our friend from the 414, who is, God bless you. God bless your heart. He is relentless and wants to have a military personnel on the line. So we will have a Marine coming up.
Oh, great.
After the news, we have Representative Stephanie Kifowit, who is a Marine, coming up after the
Wonderful.
Midnight news. More after this on 720 WGN. Coming up after the news, we will have Marine Stephanie Kifowit joining us. And she'll fill us in on her thoughts. Yes, Representative Elliot Serrano.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Representing the show. Yes.
I just have to real quick, because this stuff's been flooding in on the text line over on the commercial break. And I'm getting these texts about people saying, not our problem, not our people, not our business. We said the same thing again when Jews were trying to come here to escape the Holocaust. And history will judge us for the way we treat our fellow man. We are one human race. We're not...
Well, I mentioned that, and I asked, you know, I said that if they're human, and yes, I'm getting some flack from our texters because I'm responding because they're writing there with the T-H-E-I-R. And I get that you're in a hurry and you're texting, but it makes my eyes fry. But it's they're humans, which makes them my people. And regardless of your religious beliefs, because this texter wrote back, since Jesus didn't exist, they're just a childish fairy tale. That's your perspective. So then I guess you have no moral code at all. But not because you don't believe in Jesus, but because you're saying those aren't your people. Because I guess presumably they're not Americans. But humans are my people.
And yet we, when something happens to us, we want the rest of the world to care about what happens to us here in America. I mean, after 9/11, we wanted the entire world to rally to us because, you know, we were innocent Americans died, which they did. And it was a horrible, horrible thing. And it was no justification for it. And yet, how many people since then have given their lives? So I think, you know, we need to set aside this whole, it's not our thing, they're not our folks. I mean, come on, you know, this is the time when we need to learn to care about each other. That's what we need to do.
That's kind of been I agree.
I couldn't agree more. I think militarily stay out, but our humanity has to come to the fore.
And when you have the ability and you have already decided that you're going to ramp up your military presence in the world, then why? If not for this. Joining us in studio, we have Heather Laley, who is a journalist, Scott Stantis, who is a journalist, and we have Elliot Serrano and me, who are entertainers and have dabbled in journalism and broadcasting.
Quasi-journalist.
There you go. We were talking earlier about Tronc's sale back to the McCormick family. The majority shareholder, Michael Farrow, has sold back his part of Tronc Media, and now it's back to the McCormick family. And also this week, the staff. How many people voted for the unionization?
Feels like all of them, but I know that's not entirely accurate. But I was at the meeting. There were a lot of people at the meeting, and everybody signed the card, which is how you start.
To unionize.
Yes.
Right.
And so the next thing is to have a vote. And my prediction, and everyone else's prediction in that newsroom, LA Times just voted to go union when they were under Tronc. And it was an 80% vote.
Okay.
The prediction is that this will be much bigger than that.
Wow. Jose has some thoughts on unionizing for the newspaper. Hey, Jose, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing all fine. You know, you guys are doing good, it sounds like, as well.
we're hanging in there, you know, keeping up.
Yeah, I mean, just a couple thoughts. I mean, a lot of this really just comes down to, and I'm sorry just to kind of break it down this way, but to, like, self-preservation and, you know, personal interests. I'm a union member myself. I'm a member of the Chicago Teachers Union. So, you know, I can understand, you know, kind of where you guys are coming from in terms of just, you know, trying to, you know, push for or understanding why, you know, Tribune would want to unionize and so forth. But it's actually not even all that different from the previous conversation in terms of, you know, not our problem, you know, in terms of just a serious situation. And it's, I mean, I don't mean to, like, mix the two necessarily, but, you know, in a weird sort of way, it's like it really just comes back down to, like, what's in my best interest, right? You know, and
right.
And it's also just also about, like, you know, consistent messages. Like, we have to, I mean, not we have to, but, like, I kind of feel that when it comes to, like, whether it, Syria, okay? Part of, and with Dr. Makaitis, you know, I appreciate everything he said, and I agreed with a lot of what he said. But it's just the fact that we have a lack of consistency with our policy as far as, you know, a country. I mean, you can go back to Obama, you know, when he drew that, you know, red line or the line in the sand. And then, you know.
And they crossed it and he did nothing.
And they crossed it. Yeah. And he did nothing.
Exactly. It's a problem.
You know, exactly. Right. And then, you know, a year ago, you know, President Trump, you know, did what he did. And then, you know, just tonight he did what he did. But it's not really consistent. And I'm not even talking about from administration to administration. I'm even talking about from last year to this year. I mean, just a couple days ago, weeks ago, he's talking about, like, pulling troops from Syria, and all of a sudden he's dropping bombs in Syria. So it's like, well, which is it? Are we going to, like, you know, pull out of there, or are we going to, like, make something happen? I mean, whether it's regime change or whether it's just going to be – it's really just an issue about committing. You know, are you going to commit to being in, or are you going to commit to being out? Because waffling in the middle is not necessarily a good place. And I guess I'll make the transition to unions, you know, in the sense where part of the idea of having unions is the idea that you're going to decide that, you know what, we're kind of in this together and we're going to really, and again, just in a very blunt sort of way, commit to saying we're going to do and we're going to represent each other and we're going to be united and we're going to have the same front and we're going to have the same message and we're going to push the same ideals and views. And a lot of it just, again, coming down to, like, a granular point, it's like, I'm going to protect my job and I'm going to protect, you know, our profession, and we're going to do what we think is best for us and our our small local work community, if you will.
Jose, you are so passionate tonight. A lot of this is weighing on you, isn't it?
I mean, it is. I mean, there's a lot of things. I mean, I don't want to bring my world into this, but I just had a conversation with someone early tonight about education, and it was someone who was questioning whether teachers deserve the pay that they get.
I know, and here's the thing, Jose, there's so many issues that we need to cover, and we've got to get to our break because we're going to have ABC break in with a update on Syria. Jose, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts, and I thank the texters, too, even though we're going back and forth on things. It's really what it's all about is having this conversation. Let's take a break here and then our news on 720 WGN. Okay, let's not freak out because we have a Marine on the line. Earlier today, as you may know, having listened to WGN Radio and following all of your other news sources, the United States has launched coordinated strikes with France and the UK on an alleged chemical attack on the Syrian town of Douma last week. And one of our listeners has demanded that we talk to somebody who's been trained as military personnel. And I thought, well, someone I know who is both involved in politics, making important decisions when it comes to how we execute policy, is Representative Stephanie Kifowit, who is a Marine. Hello, Representative Kifowit. How are you doing tonight?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm well. So the news broke earlier tonight, and I know that you follow the news. And as somebody who not only is proud of your service in the military, but you are so supportive of veterans, you are an adamant supporter of veteran suicide hotlines and the support services we have in Illinois and throughout the country. When you see a news story break like this, what are some of the first thoughts that go through your mind as far as your training and the men and women that you know are being sent into danger?
Well, I think I have to reflect and sit and think that we've been in a war now for, 15 years, for an extended period of time. And our guys have been through multiple deployments, sometimes three or four or five. And it takes a toll. And now another front of another avenue of this never-ending war, to me, seems very problematic.
And so when people ask you and they'll say, well, what do you think? Well, should we be the world's police? It's not our people. It's not our problem. Should we even be involved in something like this?
Well, I think we have to be cognizant of the world and how we are all interconnected in commerce and trade and just, our lives are all interconnected worldwide. So I think we have to be cognizant about it. But I do think that we have to be smart about where we're positioning and where we're at. And we've been in a never-ending war now, and it just appears like we're going to create another one.
And you work very closely with veteran support groups, mm-hmm. And this is the kind of thing, my son just came back from D.C. He visited the Veterans Memorial, World War II Memorial, the Korean War Memorial. I gave him the name of his third cousin, my dad's cousin, who was missing in action in Korea. We talk about sending our men and women into danger and that the men and women who have died sacrificed their lives for our freedom. And that does need to mean something. What do we tell people when they say, this is the kind of thing that the president's making the right choice? He's obviously trying to make a stand in the world. We need to make a statement when it comes to Syria and Russia. Is that really what you see this as? And I know it's different when men and women have to take orders. You are built as a warrior, as a fighting machine, aren't you?
Well, I'm not anymore. I've been out 20 years.
But you were trained.
Our youngsters today, no, they're trained. And they're trained to carry out a mission. And I understand the mission. And I understand that we've had advances in Iran and Iraq and that guys go over there and they do an important job. But at the end of the day, knee-jerk reactions and putting our troops and their lives on the line is not the way to solve the problem. It needs to be comprehensive, and there needs to be, a goal and posturing and now bringing another front to the never-ending war, I think, should have been thought about and really examined it so that we have a plan of action and what our end game is. Because we cannot perpetually for decades be at war with some facet in the world. And that is what has been happening.
Do you mind if I take a call from a mom of a Marine right now? This is Carrie right now. She's calling from the 219.
Okay.
Hey, Carrie, how are you doing?
I'm okay. I just want to point out to everybody who's listening, my son is a Marine. It's what he always wanted to do. He loves his country. He wants to fight for his country. My son is deploying next month to parts unknown because it keeps changing. And while I respect that everybody has a right to their opinion, and I'm sorry, I'm trying to stay composed.
I know, I completely understand that, Carrie, I really do. Go ahead.
I wish people would take a second and remember that for every troop that is anywhere in the world, there are mothers, there are children, there are wives, there are husbands, there are people that love them. And words spoken in anger or frustration, or they affect us. We are trying our best to hold it together and stay strong for our loved ones. And when everybody gets angry and says, it's not our place, it's not our place, just try to remember that there are people out there who are trying to protect us, and they are following the orders of the government, because much like I'm a courier, you're a radio personality, we all have bosses. The government are the kids' bosses, and they are just doing their job, and they're doing it because they love their country.
Carrie, thank you so much for your call. And what's your son's name?
My son's name's Josh.
Josh?
Yeah.
I'm going to think about Josh tonight. And I honestly, when I say this, I can't even imagine. You're a wonderful mom, and you've raised a great kid who is doing what he believes in. So thank you so much for that, Carrie.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Be well, Carrie.
Thank you. And thank you for your service, Representative Kipowitz.
Well, I'm glad your son chose the best service there was, because, you know, those other guys can't close to the Marines, so.
That's what he told me. I said, well, why Marines? Why not another branch? He said, Mom, you always told me if you're going to do something, do the best, and the Marines are the best.
That's right. Go big or go home.
All right. We also support all of our men and women in the Navy, the Army, the Air Force, and the Coast Guard.
Of course.
And we have a close relationship, of course, here at WGN Radio with the United States Marine Corps. So, Carrie, we look forward to hearing from you. Please keep in touch with us, okay?
Always.
Thank you.
I normally call when Paul's eating something.
Well, Paul's here. Do you want? I'll make him eat something for you later. If you want to call while Paul's eating, I can make that happen.
Sounds perfect.
That is not a problem at all. All right, Carrie. My love to Josh. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Kipowitz, when Marines are, and when our military personnel are given orders, I mean, there is, as she mentioned, like, they're doing a job. You're you do something, and that's the end of it. And I think that's what we need. We need the young men and women to do a job that most of us can't or won't do. And what can you tell people about this moment as they watch the news? You know, what should they be trying to understand?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, absolutely, our men and women serving and I served are doing the best job in sometimes some difficult situations. So by all means, my comments should not be misconstrued that they're not doing the best job they can. My comments is to what she said, that the government and the leadership of the federal government is in charge of our veteran, our military people serving. And I would expect a responsible plan and to be responsible with these people's lives.
I agree.
And that's the bottom line.
I think we all agree.
The people serving are doing an outstanding job. But the administration and the leadership of the federal government needs to figure out and needs to have a plan of action and needs to actually have a cohesive method in which we should stop going to war with everybody. We've had a war that's been over a decade now. And now to go into another front without a plan, without an end game, I think is irresponsible to the troops that are serving. And we definitely need to make sure that we're taking care of our guys that are serving.
And that's, I think that's the bottom line. Representative Kipowitz, thank you so much. That's Representative Stephanie Kipowitz, your district again. I apologize. I didn't pull up the information.
Aurora, Naperville. So 84 is the number. So if anybody's from Aurora, Naperville, Montgomery, Oswego, listening, I'm the person that's representing you.
Thank you so much, Representative. Have a great weekend. We will talk to you again very soon, I promise.
Sounds good. Take care. Have a great weekend, too.
Thank you so much. Thanks. Will check in with our regular weekend roundup, our Freak Out Friday. I don't want to say freak out, because when you actually have missiles flying, when you have men and women in danger, I don't want to freak out. They're not freaking out, so we need to have a reasonable conversation. I know the texts continue to come in, and we can agree to disagree. Again, the I think the goal should be agree to disagree, but do not be disagreeable. And Elliot's going to go through my email right now, because that's the screen that's open. Checking in with us after the news, after this break, will be Dave Lundy and Eric Elk, and I believe Paul Farvard joins us in studio as well. We have Elliot Serrano, Scott Stantis, and Heather Lally in studio. More after this on 720 WGN. Paul, go eat something, will you? We can't freak out. There's no freaking out tonight, Michael. Let's eliminate all the Freak Out Friday audio, because we need to be a little level-headed. We want to have a conversation. There are some very important issues at hand here. We have in studio with us Elliot Serrano, Scott Stantis, Paul Farvar, Heather Lally in studio with us on the line. I mean, I don't know that I've had this many people on microphones before, but I'm kind of enjoying it. We have Eric Elk on the line with us. Lock him in. Dave Lundy also on the phone with us. Ken Jacobowski has been a little under the weather, so we hope that he feels better very soon. We've been texting back and forth. Okay, so there are moments that happen when news occurs and you go, where were you? And I don't know that I remember where we were when President Trump announced attacks on the airstrips in Syria last year, but I'm pretty sure I'm going to remember taking a nap on my son's bed, because I bought him a new mattress and it's very comfortable, better than my mattress. And I woke up because my guest at 11 p.m. was Heather Lally, who is a journalist and a restaurant. She does a lot of coverage on restaurants in the city of Chicago and trends and throughout the country. She's actually on the list of the 100 top people to follow who will cover and tell you what's going on in the restaurant industry. And she's like, hey, I have no problem if you want to bump me. Guess what's going on in Syria with the bombing in Syria? And I'm like, what? And then I find out that Tronc's been sold back to the McCormick family. I don't know what's happening. Then Dave Lundy and Eric Elk are texting me, and Ken Jacobowski's calling me, and they've got all kinds of ideas. So I don't know who to start. I'm gonna go with Eric Elk, because I always feel like Eric Elk gets talked over when he's in studio. As the conservative on our Friday night panel, as our Republican, Eric, what were your thoughts when you saw that President Trump announced a missile attack in Syria?
My initial thought was, holy cow. And then I thought, wow, I guess this whole Comey book is going to be on the back burner within the next day or so, and we're not going to hear anything about it. It's going to be like, maybe if lucky, maybe make the top 10 news story.
So as a Republican and as a conservative, your thought was wag the dog?
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, and Dave and I went back and forth on this earlier. You know, I think I agree with doing this, but the timing and everything else I thought was a little curious.
Huh. Because it's been over a week now since the gas attacks.
Correct. You know, and frankly, you know, I mean, everything else going on this week, you know, everything going on with Zuckerberg being in, or, you know, with the Facebook CEO and everything in the Congress, I only wish that these members of Congress from both sides of the aisle had questions that they, you know, that they wanted to be vocal and at the forefront, asking the president questions, the same type of questions. I mean, it was amazing how everybody wanted to be, you know, this was widely broadcasted, widely covered. I just wish that so many of these members of Congress would go and after the president this way as well.
Dave Lundy also joined us on the line. Your thoughts on the idea that perhaps this was a little odd timing?
So here's the thing. On Monday night on Justin Kaufman's show, I said a couple of things, and not to be self-referential, but one thing I said was that I would support the president should he want to do aggressive airstrikes against Syria, because Assad used chemical weapons again, and he deserves to be punished, and frankly, he deserves to have his regime degraded. So I would support very aggressive airstrikes. The other thing I said was that I expect those airstrikes to happen somewhere around the weekend, just in time to interrupt the Comey press tour. So I don't want to say I called it, but it was pretty obvious to me where this was likely to go. The only thing that gives me pause about the wag the dog theory,
yes,
is that, you know, we did this with Britain and France. Earlier tonight, I was listening to some of the analysis, and General Barry McCaffrey and Colonel Jack Jacobs were saying, well, I know everybody wants to say this is a wag the dog thing, but, they had to verify that this was the Syrian regime, and Mattis in his press conference said they only did it yesterday, so maybe we shouldn't assume it's wag the dog.
Well, that's why I'm so conflicted on this.
Is so curious.
I know. It is curious. I mean, so what are the options, though? To do something or not to do something? The timing yes, go ahead.
You have to do it. I think that I was very critical of Barack Obama when he drew the red line and then didn't act and decided to kind of take this, say, I'm going to go to the Congress. Well, everybody knew there was worse than a 50-50 shot that Congress was going to authorize the use of military force. So really, it was not the right way to go. I fully support it. That said, there was something very curious that happened tonight, because in his speech, Donald Trump said that we're going to have a sustained attack on the Assad regime. And then when General Mattis had his press conference, he said this was a one-time thing. And essentially what it became clear is that basically they just used double the number of cruise missiles that they did last year, but this was not a major attempt to degrade Assad's military. So it makes me go, like, what was the point other than just to punish him and, you know, spend $250 million in military hardware?
I know that there are a lot of people listening who have so many different thoughts and emotions on this. We're getting some texts. Elliot, I know that you have a text from a mom. Before we go to the break, let's read that text from the mom.
I have 4 sons in the military, 2 Marines, 1 Navy, 1 Army, 1 in Navy Reserves, as also a police officer. As a mom, I have been through 2 Afghanistan deployments, 1 Iraq, 1 Kuwait, 1 Djibouti, Uganda. It's been stressful, hard time for me as a mom. I'm so proud of them. I'm also concerned, and this is the great best part, that there are no distinct policies for these wars. Why can't we bring some of these refugees to our country? We need to work on both sides of the problems. It's always the innocent that are forgotten.
Thank you so much to that mom whose children are doing a job, again, that most of us can't or won't do. More after this on 720 WGN. President Trump announced earlier today, I guess that would be earlier on Friday, it is now past midnight, on Saturday morning, we have launched a missile strike on Syria, on their chemical weapons stockpile. This also includes France and the UK. And I know we've been talking about how did the president get the other countries to get involved? Because if it is a wag the dog situation, then it would just be strictly the United States. Eric Elk, what do you think about that as far as the fact that we have other allies involved in this?
I actually think that takes away the whole notion that, you know, as Dave and I can, on that text chain earlier this evening, you know, thought, boy, this really sounds like a wag the dog type scenario. The fact that we have other allies involved in this, I think, actually really boosts what the president is doing. And it goes back to what General Mattis was telling the Congress earlier this week in the hearing. I remember listening to that and watching him earlier this week, where he was saying that this is something that they will notify the leadership of the Congress, but this is something that's coming, and it almost saying it was imminent.
Well, here's the thing, and Dave, I think this is why we are having such a hard time. Many people are going to have a hard time with this. I don't know there's anybody who goes, yeah, do this, except we should be doing something for people who are being decimated, who are being attacked, who are being murdered because of what their genetic makeup is, right? That's the whole thing that we pose ourselves as people who are appalled by the Holocaust, and yet we deny the history of the United States turning away those who sought refuge here. I think the problem here is that it wouldn't be a wag the dog situation if we didn't have so many absurd things happening every single day. That wouldn't even be a discussion if it wasn't for the fact that every day there's talk of a lawyer paying off a doorman. Maybe there was a child out of wedlock. There's the FBI is no longer apparently to be trusted. I mean, isn't that part of the problem here? Dave, that's for Dave. Sorry, Eric.
Yes, as Eric said, that's just in 1 week. We all are kind of like Roberto Duran in that famous fight where he's like, no mas, no mas. It's so much to take. But I just want to call attention to one thing that happened today, because to me this is the most important Trump scandal related development. Not just of today, it's the most important development in the entire scandal. And that was that McClatchy this evening reported that that Mueller's team has evidence that Michael Cohen was in Prague when the Steele dossier said Michael Cohen was in Prague. Now, the reason that that's important is that the Steele dossier said that Michael Cohen was in Prague meeting with a top associate of Vladimir Putin, along with hackers from Romania and a number of other countries, and they were coordinating strategy for how Russia would be intervening in the U.S. Political campaign. This is what was in the Steele dossier. Michael Cohen, very famously at the time, protested and said, I've never even been to Prague. And look, here's my passport showing I was never in Prague. Well, what the Mueller people have discovered is that he was in Prague, and he entered Prague via Germany and then drove to Prague, because now in the EU, you don't have to have your passport stamped to cross country borders. You just drive across the border like it's a state or a modified version of that. So essentially, Michael Cohen has, if this report is accurate, they now potentially have Colonel Mustard in the library holding a candlestick over the dead body. It's a really big deal.
So here, Paul's one of our attorneys on the show, and I know that Dave Lundy also has is also passed the bar exam. And but I
what
I
was your score, Dave? Just kidding.
So much pressure.
What did I need to pass, Paul?
I'm just kidding.
So here, Dave and Paul, as attorneys, have you ever thought, I got to shut this possible witness up. I'm going to pay them off from my own funds.
Nope. It's not allowed.
Well, you've told me it's not allowed, but nothing happens to you necessarily if you do. You won't. I mean, are you disbarred? Well, are you fined? Are you imprisoned?
You could get disbarred depending on in certain situations. It's unethical in certain settings.
It's politics.
Well, the bar associations or the bar of different states have different rules that you have to follow for professional responsibility. And there are rules as far as what you can and can't do and what the basis is for what you did. But in this situation, Cohen, as Alan Dershowitz had argued before I went to where I watched him on CNN today, he's saying that they had a special relationship. And so the argument is,
that's adorable. I wish I had a special relationship with my lawyer who paid $130,000, possibly $1.6 million.
Overall, he's
a
fixer.
Saying.
Yeah, I mean,
that is special in the sense that it's adorbs.
It's an interesting situation. Well, I'm not going to be your lawyer. So.
Could you be my adorbs lawyer who pays $1.6 million in total out of your own funds?
I will front your toll costs if you go through a toll. I have like one that's, I didn't, you know how you're supposed to fasten it to your car? But I don't do that. I just
mine slides around my dashboard. Yeah. I'm not entirely sure it works every time.
You can use mine. That's $1.60, I believe.
So,
but only the cheap tolls, not the Skyway.
So, no, not out of state. Come on.
So this is how this show rolls.
That's like $5.
Sometimes we got to laugh about things that make us a little bit crazy. And I believe that Tom's feeling a little bit of the same. This seems ridiculous. Tom, what are your thoughts on the missile strikes in Syria?
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
I'm a political independent, I guess you could say. I don't vote blindly one way or the other. When I first heard that tonight, you know, I would go along with one of the other guys who was saying that. That was my first reaction. And the reason being is because of the timing, you know, with the special investigation, I believe President's collar is getting tighter as the room is getting hotter. And I think I question the mental stability of what's going on because of the pressure he's feeling. And I think, you know, obviously with the scandals going on, and I think you said every day there's something else about the love child, the prostitutes, and you can go on and on and on. And I think also, too, the fact that, yeah, unfortunately, I'm sure blood's going to be shed and the body bags coming back are going to be those of people who are maybe lower economic than not people of his type, his family, you know, his part people. In other words, the lower economic. So I think all throughout his career, history shows that people like that are simply disposable people to be used. And I hate to say that, but I think he's going to have blood from those folks shed just for his own personal gain to get people's minds to question.
You know, that's an interesting moment that you mentioned that innocent people's, you know, that blood has been shed, and then the idea that it's needless or that it's for a reason that we've been misled by. And I was telling my son, who visited the Korean War Memorial, that his third cousin, Edward Leroy Van Dusen, was killed. He was a young man, was my aunt's only son. And we had a conversation, my son and I had a conversation about Korea and whether or not we should have been there. And I have to, I guess for me and for the families and for the parents who are out there listening to this, who are thinking about their children who are in harm's way, we know that what they do is what their intentions are is to protect the country, is to do their best, to provide service, to enforce freedoms. And that sounds hard to say enforce, right? That's not necessarily the way we want to say protect, but we're using military force for that. And we know that it is for a purpose that in the end, we hope that they are home safe with their families, but we know that there's a possibility they might not come home. And it is hard to this struggle we have of why are we doing this? But they are there for the reasons that they want to be there for. And you're right, Tom. There are many people who are usually at a disadvantage economically, socially, who join the armed forces because they have nowhere else to go. They're looking for a family, maybe for, you know, for security for themselves, for their future. And we have to hope that those who are in power are making the right choices. Tom, thank you so much for your call. We have to take a break here. More after this on 720 WGN. Prime Minister Theresa May has said there was no practical alternative to the use of force to deter the use of chemical weapons by the Syrian regime. The Syrian state media has called the strikes a violation of international law. And you have to imagine that was about 4:30 in the morning when Syrians were awoken by the news that the United States had launched a missile attack on Syria. We can't put ourselves in the place of people around the world, whether it's in Syria or in China, North Korea, whether it's in the Congo. There's so many parts of the world where we have an influence, where we have a presence, and we don't know what that world is like, except for the men and women who have their boots on the ground, and the men and women and the children who live in those communities and are witness to what happens, the cruelty and also the humanity of people coming in and trying to help. Scott, I know that you have to go soon, and I know that is this something that, because you and I have this filter of trying to find a way to share these moments, whether, you know, yours is artistically, you draw it and you don't always, you know, a cartoonist makes it sound as though it's always going to be funny.
Yeah.
And that's always the sort of pressure on you when you come in to do an interview or people talk, you're like, oh, well, what's going to be funny about this? And you're like, that's not what I do. I mean, like, comics and cartoons are often comment on what's going on globally.
Well, think about, you know, the hardest hitting, or at least the editorial cartoon you remember when someone says that word to you. The first one that probably pops into your head is following the Kennedy assassination in 1963 with the Lincoln Memorial with its head buried in its hands by the great cartoonist who worked here in Chicago, Bill mm-hmm. Malden. They can be powerful, hopefully. That's part of the repertoire. So in this instance, I mentioned the other day, I think war is stupid. That's not to say people who participated in it are stupid. God bless the men and women who serve. But war generally, and this one feels particularly stupid to me. It feels like there's not, you know, we had the professor on earlier who talked about you need a program that continually pushes Syria towards negotiations. And this doesn't feel that way to me. This feels like we're lobbing bombs at a place and then stopping.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, yes, it was great that it was with allies, with the UK and with France. But where does this end? And the idea of using deadly force, I think, has to be one of the very last things you do. I'm sorry, I sound like such a, you know.
I know that you say it's stupid, and so for those who are like, it's not stupid, well, the definition of stupid is having or showing a great lack of intelligence or common sense. And for many people, it seems like the common sense. People are asking for, well, what is the goal, right? And I know that we had General, who was it, General Mattis, who said mm-hmm. that this is to deter other attacks, other chemical attacks, but that was the goal last year when we hit their airstrip. And so now here we are again with people dying. And it seems like they wait for, you know, Assad waits for things to die down. It waits for the heat to go away. And then he does it again.
Right.
So if we're not going to bring him to the table and demand changes, then, you know, how often do we do this?
Exactly.
Well, there's one more thing, Patty, if I may. Don't forget that this chemical weapons attack was launched shortly after Donald Trump suddenly said that he was going to pull U.S. troops out of Syria, that it was time to end our involvement in Syria, which, by the way, is exactly what everybody on the right accused Barack Obama of doing in Afghanistan and Iraq, and exactly what Donald Trump accused him of doing. And yet he was doing the same darn thing. And literally within 24 hours, Assad launches this latest chemical attack, which was not just a comparison that I drew. It was also something that John McCain attacked Donald Trump for, because he said, this is probably not a coincidence. So, you know, there's a schizophrenic quality to the president's policy in Syria, which is one of my criticisms. This attack was twice as strong as last year, but neither one of which are strong enough to really deter Assad. Mm-hmm. If we really want to do that, we have a lot more work to do.
Eric, what are your thoughts as we talk about this and talk about, you know, I know we've gone back and forth on whether or not there's a clear plan and, you know, there's so much whataboutism, right? We actually, off the air, we were talking amongst ourselves about the moment when President Clinton had a missile strike on Kosovo, when he was in the middle of the scandal with Monica Lewinsky and people attacked him for having a wag the dog moment. What is our role here, Eric, when it comes to our responsibility in Syria and other places like that?
I think that is yet to be seen. Mm-hmm. What the role will be. I think if we're going to go in and do something as we did tonight, we need to be prepared for a longer stay. And to Dave's point, we need to do more than just some strikes. I think the regime in Syria needs to be dealt with. And
what were your thoughts?
I don't think that.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I don't think that, you know, these one-off strikes are enough. I mean, I think we need to do something a little bit more if it's going to be meaningful and have a long-lasting effect that we hope that it will have.
What about when the president tweets out that maybe I'll have missile strikes or maybe I won't and Russia shouldn't be aligned with Assad? I mean, like, there was some really strange back and forth this week, and it seemed like unnecessary commentary from the president on social media. Don't you guys?
Aren't most of his tweets?
I was just going to say.
I know, but
isn't that the? But isn't that all of it?
But when it comes to military policy or what we're going, how we're going to manage position in the world.
That's the sad thing here. I mean, the way that this administration seems to comport itself and handle itself is a little concerning. And, the fact that we have some of our allies working in conjunction with us on this gives me a lot of hope that We will continue on. I was worried, I was glad to hear that our allies were working with us. I think that is very important and something that we need to not forget, because having our allies, having distanced themselves from us somewhat with this administration is very troubling. And the fact that they are working with us in conjunction on this program, I hope that they all stick with us. And I think that there needs to be more done against Assad.
Let me take someone take a breath. Yes, Paul?
The one thing that I think Dave just said about schizophrenic, what I don't, I like to think of myself as non-political in a lot of ways, especially with international. With Bush, you knew he had a Bush doctrine. You knew where he stood everywhere. With Obama, you knew what he stood. There's a doctrine for everything. This administration, I don't understand people that defend it when it's so schizophrenic. We don't know what the basis is for anything that's done internationally. And I know, Eric, you just said, I'm glad that the allies are on board. But I don't think, what were they supposed to do? Say, no, we're not going to? I mean, they have no choice.
Well, but you run the risk. So here's where it is strange, where you're like, because he has such an absurd presence on the world stage, there is that possibility where you go, are we going to be able to get the world powers, our allies, to join us? And you shouldn't have to question that.
And to be fair, the French, if you remember, during the second Iraq war, refused to join us. So they do have the option to say.
But they had information that, that at that point there was questions about whether there was yellow cake. There was all kinds of things that there was objectively verifiably information.
You mean the vial that Colin Powell brought in that ended up not being legit?
Right. They knew that wasn't legit, or they knew that
the French did?
Well, yeah. There was a lot of people that said that there was information that there was no basis. Here, I mean, fine. There's an argument that we should bomb, but. What's the policy?
Let me take at least one call before the news. Let me get to this is tough. Let me go to Tracy. Tracy was the first one in the queue. Hey, Tracy, how are you doing?
Hey, Pat and everybody, how you doing?
Hey,
very well, thank you.
I'm doing great. Well, first of all, Patty, when it comes to this administration as an American, and so much, it's so much turmoil that's going on. As an American, you can't help but to stay vigilant and alert locally as far as nationally. And the way about this latest attack on Syria, now, number one, there was a missile launched on an airstrip. That was number one. Same situation with a gas attack, or a chemical attack. Number two, the same situation, chemical attack on certain facilities. They say three times the charm. But in this case, if it is a third time, will it be something that's okay? Or what really worries you is that how will Russia, Syria, and the others, how will they retaliate behind this latest strike? That's the really frightening thing about it.
Tracy, it's always great to hear from you. All of this. I think that a lot of people have a lot on their minds tonight, and that's why the phone lines have been lighting up. I want to thank all of our texters who are texting in as well, including the 708, who we often talk to about classic movies. Thank you for your kind words. And Carrie, of course, we always appreciate when you call in, and telling us about your son and your worries about Josh is so important and vital to this conversation. And Walter, our 81-year-old military, not only a serviceman, but also who's a historian, we thank you for your contributions to the show tonight. Tracy, we'll talk to you again soon, okay? I gotta go to the news. But are you going to be at Cork and Carrie tomorrow for the show I'm doing for the I Am Who I Am?
Yes, I am.
Yay! I will be at Cork. I'll be at Cork and Carry tomorrow night. We will. I promise we'll have a good time. It's going to be wonderful with Jeannie Dugan, me, and Mona Abermashan. Thank you so much, Tracy.
Awesome.
See you tomorrow night.
The ladies of comedy are awesome. Thank you, Pat.
I'm going to the South Side. You heard it. I'm going there. Let's everybody go. Scott, have a wonderful trip. Where are you heading?
I'm heading up to Wisconsin, Kenosha.
Oh, I love Kenosha. Are you doing? As we head into Saturday morning, April 14th, every day the world changes in way. And look, that's always going to be big or small. You know, things, time passes, things change. But when you have a president of the United States standing behind a podium announcing that he has decided to order missile strikes on Syria, and thankfully, as we've been talking about, thankfully, France and the UK are also in alliance with us. They're working on this to make sure. The goal is to make sure that Syria no longer attacks their own people and kills, murders people in the streets. This is, we shouldn't even have to ask for this. This is something where we should demand this no longer happens. And it doesn't just happen in Syria. We know it's happening in other places in the world. What was that? Who said wow? Was it sneezing? I don't know. Eric Elk and Dave Lundy are on the line with us. We also have, you know what? We have callers coming in. We have Eric Elk on the line with us. He is the president and CEO of Fulcrum, Illinois. We have Dave Lundy, the president and CEO, the president of Aileron Communications. I always try to promote him, and he'll let me know when that's the case. We have a journalist, writer, freelancer, Heather Lally in studio with us. We also have freelancer, and we have, it's Elliot Serrano, who does a lot of different things. We have Paul Farvar, who's a comedian and an attorney. So I want to continue to open the conversation to our listeners. And we have Joe on the line with us who wanted to join. You were next in queue, Joe. I wasn't skipping you before the news. So thank you so much for holding onto the line.
Thoroughly understood, kiddo.
Hi, Joe.
Hey, listen, one of your compatriots there said he was, you know, a little bit disconcerted about Trump saying we're going to move all our troops out, whatever. And I think this might have been a tad of a ploy on the part of the negotiator in chief. Because guess what? It came to light today that Qatar, United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia might be willing to contribute some of their coffers for the expenditures of our troops over there. I think that's a move in the right direction. Trump has always, you know, with NATO, go back to that scenario, people are starting to pay their fair share, if you will. And those three, you know, Arabian sultanates, if you will, if they chip in, that's going to, you know, reduce our, you know, deficit, if you will.
Eric, Dave, is this something you've had experience?
Experience today. It was announced today. Yeah.
I'm looking for the news right now. From the Wall Street Journal. I know you read the Wall Street Journal.
While they're looking that up, Patty, am I correct?
No, I'm looking it up, Joe. Where?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Where? No. Where'd you read it? You always tell me that you read in the Wall Street Journal. Where is it? In the Wall Street Journal?
No, it was a commentary right after President's address, if you will.
On.
I don't know if it was CNN, NBC,
or,
CBS, or Fox. I don't know.
There we go. So, but not in the Wall Street Journal. I'm just looking for the citation for it. So it was a commentary. Go ahead.
Yeah. Am I correct in remembering that you predicted Trump's victory?
Yes.
Okay, good. Well, that's what I thought. Okay. So, you know, just like China has, you know, acquiesced a little bit on their tariffs, if you will, we're going to be able to ship some cars into China. I think it was a nice play on Trump's part saying, hey, what, you know, United Arab Emirates, you know, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, you guys have a vested interest. So why don't you pick up some of the tab? And it was announced. I wish I knew the exact source, if you will, but it eludes me right now. But that, you know,
check it out on the Google.
I know. No, Joe, because you you've told me that you read all of the sources. You read the Wall Street Journal and you listen to Fox.
You got it.
So I'm just trying to find something that's not a Fox commentary. Go ahead.
I must admit I'm failing in remembering the exact source of it because I listened to a lot of stuff today and it's intermingled, if you will. But it had to be on one of the it wasn't CNN, that's for doggone sure. But it was came across that those three entities are willing to, you know, put it in the pot.
Here's what I have. When I Google Emirates picking up tab for military, I get something from 3 weeks ago. I get something from a week ago. I get something from October 4th, August 4th, a month ago. Saudi Arabian and UAE foreign policy, a finger in every pie. Military live demonstration of UAE Armed Forces Union Fortress in March. So I'm just trying to find this story.
I found Syria
Qatar?
Could take part.
Qatar or Qatar?
Qatar.
Uh-huh. I have Saudi.
Whatever you pronounce it, I don't know.
Saudi could take part in military response in Syria.
Okay.
What was the date on that?
4 days ago.
4 days ago.
Reuters.
Oh, okay. Get that one.
But it doesn't say anything about Qatar.
So this makes you feel better in the sense that I'm just trying to piece together. Go ahead.
Very simply put, they have a vested interest. It's their backyard, okay? So it only makes sense for Trump to give them a carrot, say, oh, I'm going to move the troops out, whatever. You know, to try to prompt them to chip in and pay for their own protection. We're not going to be the policemen for the world.
Here you go, Joe. Here's Dave. Go ahead, Dave.
I'm sorry. That is a reinvention of history. The president said something. He said it very impulsively. The military folks were very upset about what he said. He backed off of it within 48 hours. John McCain read him the Riot Act because shortly after he said it was when the Syrian chemical gas attack occurred. The idea that President Trump does these impulsive things always with a strategy in mind, I think, is fanciful. And there's very little evidence to support that.
You find no verification that there was a revelation today by one of the news outlets, if you will, even, you know, Fox News, that those three entities are going to consider participating in their own self-defense. That's, you know, it didn't amaze me because I said it didn't make sense.
Money in their own self-defense.
Pardon me?
They spend a lot of money in their own self-defense.
So you mean for aiding the United States in our self-defense?
No. Their own self-defense. As I said, we're not going to be the policemen for the world. We can't afford it. We're basically broke. So the deal is, those three entities, they have a vested interest in their own protection, and they need to chip in for the United States' participation in ensuring their security.
I'm trying to. Michael Heidemann has been furiously trying, not furiously, not like angrily, like, but, sure. but energetically. Energetically, been trying to track this down.
Sure.
Yes. Are you saying
I know it? I know. I heard it today, and it was supposedly fresh info.
Are they doing more than they typically do for their self-interest? Is that what you heard, or is this something that
they're contributing? They're contributing to our coffers for having our guys over there, our blood and guts, if you will.
Are they contributing in money or
yes,
troops?
Wait, wait, no. So wait. Joe, are you sure it wasn't part of the president's statement tonight as when he announced that we had the military action in Syria? And these are his full remarks. This is one of the paragraphs. The United States has also rebuilt our friendships across the Middle East. We have asked our partners. We've asked our partners to take greater responsibilities for securing their home region, including contributing large amounts. So he asked for it.
I think you hit the nail on the head, Patty. And
it's the same way
he approached the U.N.
That was Michael. He's asking.
So he's asking.
He's asking for them to include contributing large amounts of money for the resources, equipment, and all of the anti-ISIS effort. Increased engagement from our friends, including Saudi Arabia, the United States Emirates, Qatar, Egypt, and others, can ensure that Iran does not profit from the eradication of ISIS.
Bingo, Patty, you bailed me out.
It's the same way he approached the UN.
Yeah, but
the UN has not been contributing their fair share for eons, okay? So he put up the same scenario with those guys. Guess what? They're starting to participate.
No, that's he's saying he's asking for it. It's not saying
well, sure,
that's not even saying that it's happening.
No, hold on. Everyone get back off of Joe.
Mm-hmm.
But Joe calls in and he knows he's walking into these waters.
Sure.
So Joe, when Qatar and the Emirates and everybody says that they're ponying up, then that's exactly what you said. But right now he's asking for it. So that's a little bit different. That's all.
Precisely, and threatening to pull troops out was the germination point. It was a little ploy on his part, just like the U.N.
No, was it?
Oh, gee whiz. No, I'm done.
No, you're good. You're good, Joe.
I mean, he's asking for it. If it happens, then it's a good negotiation.
No, Joe, you were good.
Right.
Look, hey, you got to look. We're all good. It's all wonderful. It's a great weekend, Joe. Thank you so much for bringing that to our attention. And here's hoping they do step up. Because
and you bailed me out, Patty. Thanks a bunch, kiddo.
No, not at all.
Bailing.
It's all.
No, you did because you identified the source.
It's a conversation, Joe. Thank you so much. You know what? Someday you got to come out to one of my shows so we can shake hands. All right.
Okay, I'll be there.
All right. Be well. Adios, Zane.
Can I just?
Adios.
Edelweiss,
I just want to say that I have asked actress Heather Graham to be on my podcast for a year now, and she has not done the podcast. So therefore, she is not doing the Singles Only podcast because I've asked her to do it. But I'm just saying,
Heather Graham to Qatar.
Well, I'm just saying there's a difference. I mean, I've asked my parents to come to my shows for 2 years, and they haven't come to a show.
So let's go to Rod. Rod has a question about... Oh, Michael Palisak's here. I'm sorry. Hey, Rod, how are you doing tonight?
Well, there's room for improvement always. But
I think we all feel that way. Believe me, we all feel that way tonight, Rod. Tell us what you want to say.
Well, for one example, there's room for improvement because I don't have the answers. And I don't think anybody does.
No,
and
I agree.
Want that job. I mean, I wouldn't want that job as president because I'm guilty of criticizing Donald Trump. And I wasn't going to bring up Saudi Arabia, but Joe, who mentioned Saudi Arabia, I just want to reflect on 17 years ago, is that now, when the towers were hit and G.W. Bush shut all the airlines down, nothing to fly, but they flew the Saudi family back to Saudi Arabia that day. That was kind of suspicious. But then I'll get on to this. The biggest blessing I think that would ever happen is something to do, something that could bring people like me and whoever is against Donald, doesn't like Donald Trump, to where we can actually trust this man.
That's fair.
You had on,
uh-huh.
The one speaker you had on before, this whole thing, Assad, he's evil. He's evil. The guy, to gas his people, if this happens, because, you know, fake news, but if this happens, he should be taken out. But, you know, this is like all by design. And, you know, when we went into Iraq, and George Bush Sr. said, stay out of there, he could foresee. It just opened up a can of worms. Now, I just have a question. Is this anything to do, because I mentioned the last time I was on here, that I do listen to the evangelical station once in a while, and they say that this is nearing the end because it's supposed to end in Syria, the last war. Is there anybody that can help me on that?
Well,
I mean, I don't know.
I think that, look, every presidency, I think there's a different theory as far as trying to bring about the end of days or the quickening. Elliot, you and I have talked about this before. I think that there were theories that President Bush might be of the mind that he want, you know, with our efforts in different parts of the world, similar ideas came about. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
People were talking about the quickening.
The quickening, the rapture, the end of days, the incredibly vague. I mean, people want to insist that it makes a lot of sense, but if you read the book of Revelations, it's not that clear cut. I mean, there are many people who say that we are currently that the rapture has already occurred and we are currently within the times of tribulation or during the so-called times of the millennium of peace. So, you know, it's very difficult to just say this is what it is. Oh, and another numerologist has said that the rapture will occur on the 23rd of April.
Right.
So I will say this. If you are planning on being raptured on the 23rd of April, by all means, I'm willing to take over your bank accounts, look after your property, your car, stuff like that. Just Venmo or PayPal me. I'll make sure it's taken care of.
Right. So I think to that question about, you know, this idea that it's end of days or bringing around the rapture, it's been theories, I think, throughout different parts of history where you wonder. And I find it hard to believe that President Trump is somebody who has that goal in mind or that the evangelicals.
I don't think he's even read the Bible.
Well, but the evangelicals might have put him in power, maybe, with that.
Well.
Ooh. Rumble strips. Are you hitting rumble strips, Rod?
Oh, I'm still on.
Did you hit a rumble strip?
Something.
Sorry, Patty.
Yes, Dave.
That was actually Ken Jacobowski texting us about. and my cell was on my belly, so it reverberated into the into my landline.
Wait. Wow, that's one heck of a belly you've got there.
Wait, I don't
know. Something I didn't need to hear right now.
Hold on, I didn't see what he didn't message me. He only messaged you guys. I didn't get that text. All right, Rod, did you have any other questions? Because I got to take a break here and get to the news soon.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I just have a, like I said, a biggest blessing would be if there was something that would could cause us to trust this man. I'm not on anymore.
You are. Hi, Rod.
But the, you know, I look at the grassroots where I'm up living up here in the sticks. You know, the little community, and there was three people I know that were drafted during Vietnam, and they went, and this man had 5 deferments. And then he called John McCain, doesn't say he's a hero. And he didn't condemn that other, you know.
Oh.
Anybody can stand up there and order the military to do something. Now, I mean, you know, I just pray that he does the right thing. I honestly do.
We all do. We all do. And and again, for our parents, we have Carrie who's called and texted in. We also have another mom who called and texted in. You know what? For them, for their families, we have to pray and hope that we're doing everything for the right reasons. Rod, have a great weekend. I have to let you go because I got to go to break, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you. Eric, I promise we're going to talk to you again. You're there, right?
I'm here.
You text me when you want to say something because I feel like you just hang back. Otherwise, you know.
I'm going to jump in.
All right, excellent.
I was just letting the callers kind of have their piece. I know you like to do that, and I think it's important that we hear from them.
Thank you so much. All right, stand by, you guys. More after this on 720 WGN. It has been an extraordinary couple hours of conversation. I want to thank everybody for joining our talk here about what's going on globally. And I want to give our friends on the line, Eric Elk and Dave Lundy, an opportunity to sum up. They've had a long night. They've been on the phone. They've been on hold listening to our conversation and joining in. Dave Lundy, let me let you go first and give us your thoughts on the news of the week and including what's going on today.
I'm exhausted, Patty. I just, you know, these developments in the Trump thing between Trump and Comey and Michael Cohen and this guy who Michael Cohen arranged a $1.6 million payment to a Playboy playmate for getting her pregnant, and all of this insanity. I know I'm not supposed to be Freak Out Friday, but if there ever was going to be a Freak Out Friday, it kind of would have been tonight. So, you know, and in Syria, we'll see where it goes. I support, you know, the president doing something smart. We'll see if this is it.
Thank you for that. And Eric, what do you think?
Hey, I just think it's been an incredible week. I think folks need to check as many news sources as you can to read between the lines, and I think things are going to get interesting real soon.
Well, you guys, have a great weekend. We'll touch base next week. We might be talking before next Friday, depending on how things go and how things develop. Dave, I know, and Eric, I know that you guys are often great for Tell Me Something Good. I want to give you a chance to tell me something good.
Nope. I got nothing.
I'm pretty excited.
Tell me something. Come on, you gotta have something good.
Wait, the weather. Well, no, not that. Oh, I'm so excited about Max's first Little League game of the year. Oh, no.
No, wait, that didn't work. Yeah, all right, fine. Give me something next week.
Got
all right.
My health.
All right, you got your health. Have a great weekend, you guys. Take
there
care.
There you go. That's my something good.
So we got a text from the 224. I just happened upon this show. At the very least, I would call it journalistically irresponsible. Well, the good news is I'm a talk show host, so I'm a broadcaster. I am not, as I will often tell everybody, I am not a journalist. The good news is the news is coming up with our journalists, both here at WGN Radio and from ABC News.